Those words and bringing a little bit of your family history into this year. Of course, November 9th, a few weeks from now, less than a month, we'll mark the 80th anniversary of Kristallnacht, November 9th, 1938. Santa Linda's been reflecting on that as well, and the history of German Jewry. You always have to remember that, you know, when we think about the Shoah, it's not just, you know, this massive catastrophe, but the truth of the matter is all these, you know, sub-catastrophes for different communities. And I appreciate Linda bringing in her own family's history. So I tried to structure this year as a way of reflecting a little bit on the particular tragedy that befell the German Jewish community, and reflecting a little bit on the German interwar period through the lens of the Dor HaMabul and the Dor HaFlaga. So I'll try to demonstrate what I mean by that. Of course, we have two different generations that are described in the parsha that we just read, Parshat Noach. And I want to begin with the more challenging of the two, which is often referred to as the story of Migdal Bavel, which is not a great name for the story, but the rabbinic name is the Dor HaFlaga, the generation that was dispersed all over the world. As the Torah concludes, "Umisham hafitzam Hashem al panei chol haaretz," that they were in one place. The desire was to be unified. "Vahi chol haaretz afa achat u'dvarim achadim," and for whatever reason, God chose to scatter them. And it's a really very enigmatic thing, because normally we look at achdut as something very positive. As a matter of fact, many of us are familiar with the famous commentary of Chazal, cited by Rashi at the end of this section, that the Dor HaFlaga, because they were unified, they were spared a much greater penalty that they really deserved. Rashi quotes, "Gadol HaShalom v'sanui HaMachloket." So the question is, what did they really do wrong altogether? It's not my original question. You know, as early as the Rashbam, Rabbeinu Shmuel ben Meir, Rashi's grandson, speaking a little bit about Jewish history. Of course, Rashi was educated in Germany and brought the Torah back to France. The first great destruction of German Jewry was in 1096. In the first Crusades, had Rashi not brought the Torah of Germany to France, there would have been a terrible rupture in the Masorah and the transmission. So in any event, Rashi then transmitted the Torah to his own children and grandchildren. So the Rashbam, Rashi's grandson, poses a famous question. He says, "Lefi apshat," which is something we should always be interested in, "according to the simple reading of the Torah, ma chatu dor haflaga," what is their sin? That they wanted to be unified and they were interested in building a city with a tower? And if you'll say, "Umigdal v'roshova shamayim," that this connotes that they somehow wanted to wage war on God, the Rashbam says that's silly. It's obvious that they're speaking b'lashon hagzama, that they're just exaggerating. Moshe Rabbeinu himself, when he describes the fortresses of the cities in Canaan, he describes them arim gedolot uvitzurot bashamayim. It's not saying that they were literally in the heavens. So the Rashbam wants to try to understand what exactly the sin of the Dor HaFlaga was. So that's something that I think we should all think about. It's not altogether obvious, and the truth is that there are really many, many different theories. And if anything, especially in light of the comment that we just raised, "Gadol HaShalom v'sanoi HaMachloket," the fact that they all wanted to be unified, prima facie, again, at the first glance, should seem not like a negative thing, but should really seem like something very positive. So let's leave that as one question. Second question. We know that Rashi, generally, who favors the Midrashic tradition, quotes the view that probably we were all raised with, that when they said "Hava nivnalanu ir umigdal v'roshova shamahim," that they literally meant that they were going to wage a war against God. "Nale l'rakia v'naseimo milchama," that they're going to wage a war against the Yichudo shel Olam, and that was what the Torah was alluding to when it said "Dvarim achadim." But we should already note that the Gemara noticed something very strange about that. If you're really going to believe that theory, the Gemara says, where should they have built this tower? If you really want to build a tower to the heavens, where should it be built? If you want, on the top of a mountain. Where do they do it? In a valley. The Torah says, "Vayhi b'nosam mikedem, vayimtzu bik'a b'eret shinar vayeshvu sham." If you really wanted to build a migdal v'roshova shamayim, and you literally meant that, so why in the world would you build it in a valley? The Gemara even says that when somebody suggested the answer, the Beit Midrash of somebody named Rabbi Shela, Imri Devei Rabbi Shela, that they were actually trying to build a tower into the heavens. So the Gemara says, Achiku Alei B'marava, which means, Be'eretz Yisrael Ayu Tzochakim Ala Tshuva Hazot. They were laughing about it, that how could anybody rational really believe that that was the case, that they really wanted to build the tower into the heavens. This is a very difficult kind of an approach. But Rashi says, it gives many interpretations, but one of them is they wanted to make smuchot, which we would call scaffolding, that there shouldn't be a mabul again, that there shouldn't be a flood, that they calculated the mabul will happen about one time every 1,656 years, and they were concerned that it would happen again, and so they were going to build scaffolding. So this is a very unusual comment. The Ibn Ezra says, you know, it's a very strange thing. They should have all known, right, that there was a promise. After all, Noach and his children, and these were all descendants of Noach and his children, that there was a promise. Velo aviod mabul l'shachet kol basar. God already promised there wasn't going to be a mabul, so he doesn't understand this midrash altogether, leaving aside the problem of why would you build the tower in a valley as opposed to on top of a mountain. So I do want to come back to that issue, where the Midrash seems to be reflecting the idea that the Dor HaFlaga was somehow a reaction to Dor HaMabul, but we'll need to take a non-literal interpretation. When it comes to Midrashim in general, it's important always to remind ourselves of the comment that Rambam made about Midrashim, where Rambam says somebody who does not believe in Midrashim is a heretic, is a kofer. Somebody who believes Midrashim is a fool. So he says you have to know how to interpret Midrashim. Okay, so what does it really mean that they wanted to build scaffolding? It doesn't really mean that they wanted to build scaffolding. It means that they had some kind of reaction to the Dor HaMabul, so I want to come back to that. And the final question that I wanted to pose before we turn our attention to the Dor HaMabul, and then we'll try and tie everything together, is the following. So normally, what do you do first? Accumulate construction materials or decide that you're going to make a building? You know, mahi darko shel olam. Right. First you decide what you're, you know, building, and then you choose the construction materials. Okay, so that's not what the Torah says in the context of the Dor HaFlaga.
Faculty for yearbook photo, last call, final call.
I won't be offended if anybody wants. So it's very strange.
I need to go. Come back.
Endeavor. So if you just go through the psukim, it's very strange. So we already quoted the first pasuk. Vayichal aretz afa achadu dvarim achadim. Pasuk aleph. Pasuk bet, we already mentioned. Vayhibin asam bikedim, vayimtsu bik'a be'eretz shinar, vayishvu sham. Pasuk gimel, vayimru yishal re'ehu. Hava nilbina levenim v'nisrefa l'srefa. Let's make bricks. Okay, and we're going to use the bricks. Vati lahem aleveina la'aven, that this was in place of stones. Okay, according to one view, they weren't able to find stones in this valley. V'hachemar hayalem lachomer, and they'll use this kind of mud in place of mortar. Then the next pasuk says, Vayomru, hava nivna lanu ir. Let's build a city, umigdal v'rosho v'shaman. Muzar ma'od. Why would you be producing bricks if you hadn't yet decided what you're going to do with them? So I think that will be the linchpin for us. Okay, so let's now turn our attention just for 2 or 3 minutes to the Dor HaMabul, and then we'll hopefully be able to come back and resolve what was the real issue with the Dor HaFlaga. What did the Medrash mean when it said they were reacting to the Dor HaMabul, that they wanted to build smuchot? Why would they make bricks before they actually decided that they wanted to build a city, and in particular a city with a tower? And why in particular were they building this tower in a valley instead of building it on top of a mountain? So all of these things really need to be explained. All of these things need to be dealt with. So if you had to describe what the society of Dor HaMabul was like, you know, the Torah's words are very helpful. The Torah says, "Vayar Elokim et ha'aretz v'hinei nishchata," that God looked at the world and he saw the world had already been destroyed. I often say that it's not really precise to suggest that God destroyed the world through a mabul. That's not what the Torah says. The world was already destroyed. God just cleared out the debris and created the possibility for renewal. That's why we have Rashi's famous comment that the 40 days and 40 nights of rain were keneged yitzirat havlad. That's the amount of time in halacha that it takes a fetus to be recognized as an independent entity. Insofar as the mabul was a destructive moment, it was actually also a moment for where the potential for creation, for yitzirat havlad, was actually being renewed. If you really wanted to understand what that society was about, There's a pasuk that's helpful. Vayomer Elokim leNoach, Ketz kol basar ba lefanai ki mala haaretz chamas mipneihem. That the reason that I'm going to now clear out the debris of a world that's already been destroyed is because the Dor HaMabul was characterized by many terrible things, but in particular the sin of chamas, the sin of gezel. And the sin of Gezel basically means you have a society where people don't feel responsible for each other, just the opposite. And individuals feel no sense of responsibility, forget about altruism, but no sense of responsibility towards the next person. You have individuals abusing each other in the most direct way. Gezel, in particular, means that they're not, you know, necessarily trying to sneak around, but it was a society where people stole by force. Just to give one example from the end of Parshat Bereishit, this is where it's actually explicit in the Torah. The Torah says, "Vayiru b'nei ha'Elohim." B'nei Elohim doesn't mean the children of God; it means powerful people. Elohim is the term that the Torah uses for powerful people. Sometimes it can mean God if we say Elohim. "Vayiru b'nei Elohim et b'not ha'adam ki tovot heina, vayikhu lahem nashim mikol asher bacharu." They took whoever they want, and Rashi is a very important comment. Mikol asher bacharu, right? Afilu eshadish. They would destroy other people's families. A society that worshipped individual autonomy, and a might certainly made right, and whoever was more powerful basically got their way. Okay, and that was what characterized the Dor HaMabul, and of course that society had destroyed itself. So what would you say is the opposite of a society that revolves around the power of the individual? If you had to put it in terms of political science.
Community.
Exactly. A totalitarian state. A society that seeks to crush the individual. So the Nitziv develops the idea, the Rav developed it even further, but that the true sin of the Dor HaFlaga, it's very difficult to figure out what is a sin, right? The Rashbam said, Lefi HaPshat, Machatu Dor HaFlaga. But if you understand that Midrash, that they were reacting to the Dor HaMabul, they didn't really think there was going to be a flood again, and they weren't actually building scaffolds, but they were saying, how can we not become that kind of a society? So instead of a society that revolves around the individual, what you need to have is a society that basically crushes individualism. There's a great song that goes back about 30 years plus, which is a critique of communism by a group called Pink Floyd. All in all, you're just another brick in the wall. So it's actually about East German society, the wall. So it's very fascinating to note, what do we note? The inversion in the psukim. Before they ever decided, according to the presentation, the Torah, what they wanted to do as a society, what did they say they wanted to be? Hava nilbina levenim. Then we'll figure out what to do with them. We want to be a society that produces bricks. Okay, there's something very deeply significant about that. And the Nitziv connects that to the idea. Avram, who was obviously living there, this is the world into which he emerged, had different kinds of ideas, and what did they do with him? And the Tziv thinks that this is actually not just the Medrash, but the Pshat, that they took him and they threw him into the very furnace where they were producing these bricks. In other words, if you're going to come with your own ideas and challenging the basic totalitarian view, where people, individuals, are not allowed to express their distinctiveness, then what we're going to do is we're going to put you in that very fire which is meant to produce bricks. And that's a very important idea. And the Nitziv goes on to suggest that the reason that they built a tower in a valley was that it was a watchtower to make sure that nobody escaped. So if you build a tower on a mountain, it's actually easy to kind of slip away down the sides of the mountain. But if you build a tower in a valley, it's actually very easy way to catch people, because you can actually see them as they try to escape their way out of the valley. That's the way he interprets the pasuk, "Vinasa lanu shem." He actually says they would put guards there. The tower itself wasn't significant. You know, if you have an unmanned tower, it doesn't help you very much. But that's why it would be in the Bik'ah. So the Rav developed this idea of how in these two societies we could really appreciate two models of failed cultures that the Torah rejects. On the one hand, you know, you have an autonomous culture of the Dor HaMabul, when people feel no sense of boundaries and no sense of communitarism, no sense of responsibility to the other, no echpatiyut lezulat, and they'll take whatever they can. Vayikhu lahem nashim mikol asher bacharu. People are literally doing whatever they can to satisfy themselves and their needs at the expense of everybody else. So that's a failed culture, where there's no sense of chesed, there's no sense of responsibility or respect for boundaries between individuals. The reaction to that, right, this is encompassed by the Medrash of, oh, let's build scaffolding so that there's not another mabul. They weren't really afraid of a mabul, but they were concerned about very much was the idea of becoming that kind of an individualistic culture is to crush the individual. And of course, who emerges at the end of Parshas Noach is Avram, who we call, you know, Avraham in light of his name change, who reflected a kind of a synthesis of the best of these two societies and not either failed extreme. That is to say that Avram introduced the notion of Tzelem Elokim, that if people are really created in the image of God, we have to allow them to express some degree of individuality. Tzelem Elokim, by definition, highlights the uniqueness of the individual, the inimitable qualities of the individual. You cannot allow the state or the group to crush the individual. That's one side of the equation, Tzelem Elokim. But Tzelem Elokim equally means that I have a responsibility to this person because this person is invaluable. And so it's not just that Avram introduced the notion of individualism, but an individualism that reflected the idea that I'm not the only one that's important, but everybody's important. And of course, the Torah would comment in Parshas Vayera about that, Vishamru derech Hashem la'asot tzedakah u'mishpat l'man havi Hashem al Avraham et asher diber alav, that it was a kind of a recognition of Tzelem Elokim that would then translate into deep concern, which would correct, of course, the pathologies of both the Dor HaFlaga and the Dor HaMabul. If you think about the period in history that Linda was discussing at the opening of this year, and many sociologists and historians have pointed this out, but what Germany experienced after the catastrophe of the First World War, remember, you know, the First World War at the time was called the Great War. You know, society had never experienced this level of destruction. And a society that had been built around aristocracies, a Prussian military culture, autocracy, all of a sudden had the Weimar Republic, which was, as far as most Germans were concerned, a deeply anarchic experience. It was chaos, not to mention inflation that was going on in the collapse of the economy. And so you had what was for, you know, most people in German society, an intolerable level of individuality, right? Culture changed dramatically. You know, you could read a lot about that, not for the context of this year, but what became socially acceptable in terms of personal expression was far beyond anything that would have been imaginable even 10 or 15 years earlier. And of course, what was the reaction to a society that many saw as debased and corrupt in obviously paralleling the Dor HaMabul, was the emergence of a fascist state that sought to crush any kind of deviation from what the party line really was. And so this is a pattern throughout history where society will toggle back and forth between societies that tend to err on the side of individualism versus societies that tend towards move towards extremes of communitarianism to the point of the emergence of a totalitarian state. And our path, as blazed and introduced by Avram and then Avraham, and meant to be followed by all of us, is a kind of a synthesis of the individual and the community. Again, everything starts with the inviolable quality of the individual being created by Tzelem Elokim. But if I recognize not only my own Tzelem Elokim, but most importantly, the Tzelem Elokim in somebody else, that does create a sense of responsibility towards that other person. So it's a society where there is a sense of chesed. There is a sense of commitment to tzedek and mishpat, which is rooted in the inviolable qualities of the individual. And that, of course, finds perhaps its most dramatic expression in the famous statement, the Gemara Masechta Bava Basra, that we look at even a single individual as a whole world, because if they really are created in Tzelem Elokim, that means they're irreplaceable. That the loss of one person isn't just the loss of one person. The loss of one person is, by definition, the loss of an entire world, because that person's unique qualities can never be replaced. And so Parshas Noach then becomes a study in political philosophy in terms of failed cultures, and our responsibility is to try to walk, you know, in the path of Avram to build a society on the basis of Tzelem Elokim, where the individual is sacrosanct, but the individual then, of course, has to recognize his or her responsibility to society, because society is comprised of these individuals created B'Tselem Elokim, who are by definition deserving of not just justice and righteousness, but even chesed, even acts of kindness that go beyond that which is absolutely required. And in that way, we avoid either extreme of the failed cultures of the Dor HaMabul and the Dor HaFlaga, respectively. So Linda, thank you again so much for sponsoring and bringing in your own family history. God willing, we'll have the opportunity in weeks ahead. I think Joanne already, we have one scheduled for next week. Somebody mentioned to me, Marion wanted to sponsor as well. And we'll talk about if there's going to be a time change. Okay.